Well, the American Bankruptcy Institute predicts there will be more than 1.1 million consumer bankruptcies nationwide this year. And that's up. I think last year there were 2007, there were 823,000, which is also quite a large number. But maybe you're in that kind of situation. Maybe you're not. Maybe you know somebody who is. Maybe you just have some questions about a lot of issues, foreclosure and bankruptcy, with Ken Doran, Madison-based attorney, author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustment. It's a second edition published by Random House. Really happy to have him along today. And if you have some questions, I hope you will join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And Ken Doran, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry. Good to be here.
Are you seeing, let's take a look at affluent households in trouble. I've been reading a little bit about it. Are you seeing more affluent households in trouble with mortgage debt than in past years?
Yes, I think so. I think there is a pattern of that. Things are different, as everyone knows, in the mortgage market than they have been in a long time, in some ways perhaps than they've ever been. And that has caught a lot of people who do have perhaps fairly good incomes and have some assets in terms of their houses. But when the houses have gone down in value rather than up, that makes people vulnerable to changes in their finances or the economy much more so than might have been the case in the past.
Yeah, I would think so. And we've been seeing that some people are just walking away from their homes. They're in mortgages they can't afford and well, probably homes they can't sell.
There's more and more of that. Some people do that, and some people probably, in sheerly economic terms, should do that or perhaps consider that and don't realize their options. Wisconsin has fairly good laws on foreclosures. Those vary greatly from state to state and can occur quite quickly in some places. In Wisconsin, a home mortgage generally takes a minimum of 9 or 10 months, sometimes longer. And being aware of where people stand on that can be pretty significant. Some people don't realize that and walk away from a house a lot more quickly than they need to. Unfortunately, some people don't pay any attention to the notices and are still blindsided by the process when it gets to its last stage.
Yeah. So people, there are stages, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I think it's worth discussing again. There are various stages, yes. And you need to be on top of it. A person needs to be on top of each stage.
And a Wisconsin home mortgage foreclosure, in addition to all of the, if you fail to make the payments, you'll get late notices and various types of collection things you would with almost any account. Foreclosure in Wisconsin requires a lawsuit with service of papers. And at that stage, I would strongly recommend anybody get some good legal advice. Unless you're absolutely sure you completely understand what's going on, which not that many people do, then that's what lawyers are for. In some cases, there may not be a lot to be done that will actually change the course of events, but it is nevertheless very useful to know what is going on and get some good advice about how to protect yourself and maximize your rights. And in some cases, there may be things to be done.
Yeah. Well, Kevin in Toma is online with a question for you, so let's just go right to Kevin. Kevin, hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind? Yeah, great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. My question is, I was wondering, I've seen on my credit report, and I was wondering if it was legal, whether a debt, let's say, for a credit card or something that's been written off, or after 7 years I've seen that the same debt under a different company's name, like they'll sell that debt when it's nearing 7 years so they can try and extend it for another 7 years with another company. I was wondering if that was legal or if you've seen that before.
Well, we're seeing a lot more of that. Of old debts tend just not to go away. They will be resold and people will try and collect them. A couple of things on that is there is a statute of limitations. If there's been no activity on the account for 6 years, no new charges or payments, then legally you're protected. If they sue you you should be able to defeat the lawsuit or get the case dismissed on those grounds. That doesn't prevent people from trying to collect it. So two things you need to be aware of is to definitely protect yourself if you ever are sued. You can, there's a fairly simple process, basically by letter, in which you can complain about the entry on your credit report, and that would be grounds for doing it. If this is an older account than 7 years and simply a new owner, that's fairly easy to find on the internet of the complaint forms for that. For some people, clearing up those kind of details on credit report can make a lot of difference. There are also other people, of course, where those kind of details may be fairly minor compared to their overall finances, and you need to be sure which category you're in before you know how much attention to pay to something like that.
Yeah. Does that help you out, Kevin?
Oh, yes, it does. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Are you seeing first, I'm wondering, I read an article, I think it was in the New York Times, but not positive. I think it was the New York Times that talked about the fact that attorneys who deal in personal bankruptcies are seeing a lot more business these days, in part because of maybe some changes in the laws regarding bankruptcies.
There haven't been any major changes in the last year or so. There were changes about 3 years ago, and that still affects the current rates. The records for filing were actually set back in 2005. There were some changes at that point deliberately designed to make bankruptcy harder. And in reaction to that, almost certainly an overreaction, bankruptcy filings went down considerably. In fact, those changes really didn't affect the legal alternatives available to most people all that much. But it took a while for everybody, including lawyers, to figure out how severe the changes were. But with the passage of time, that sort of fades into history. Plus, of course, the situation with the economy has an effect. Even in good times, people get overextended for many reasons. And in bad times, the individual effect of a major economic reversal, a job loss, or anything else is often delayed. So it isn't tied on a month-to-month basis to the economic situation, but no doubt about it is the tough times we're going through lead to more people being in financial trouble.
Now, Rick in La Crosse, we're moving to you next. Rick, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you. My question is regarding, we have children that incurred debts with the county, and they are 10, 12 years old, and now they're coming after us on our tax returns. Is that legal, seeing there was no activity on it?
So there was, these are, your children incurred some debts to the county itself.
Right.
So it's a governmental thing.
Right.
This gets beyond my specific area of expertise where I can tell you specifically, just from memory, which way it goes. It depends exactly what they were for. And some of those, depending on the type of services, may be classified as a form of child support, of money that was paid for the benefit of your child, whether you had requested it or whether you necessarily agree how beneficial it was. You are certainly within your rights to ask specifically for their legal justification or reasons or the specific law they're claiming that you owe the money under. And you may need to consult a family lawyer or someone with expertise particularly in that to tell you for sure. Frankly, I suspect in a lot of cases they do have a legal justification for it, but that's the kind of specific question you'd have to ask about the particular bill you're getting.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Let's see. We have some more callers online. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Matt, are you there?
Yes.
Good
afternoon.
Hello.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, my question is I was a sole proprietor business in the trucking industry, and I never incorporated or anything, so I'm going through a bankruptcy due to the fuel. How long does the bankruptcy stay on your credit, and how long is it before you're able to start rebuilding it?
The bankruptcy can stay in your credit record for 10 years, and how soon you can start rebuilding it is essentially, you know, immediately. For consumer purposes of consumer credit, it's a little different if you're hoping to continue in business, but basically for consumer purposes, until very recently, there's been more credit around than ever before. The current financial markets may change that a little bit. I'm not sure how much, but for most people, learning how to steer clear of credit is actually more important than qualifying for it, and you have to be careful about looking at things as a credit rating problem when they're a dollars and cents problem. What is on your record tends to age in a hurry, and people do, in fact, to the extent they legitimately need credit, recover pretty fast from bankruptcy. Your current income at current debt levels will have far more to do with that than what is on your past record even a year ago, let alone 10 years ago. So I would urge you, as I do most people, to think of their situation in dollars and cents terms and figure out what they would do if there was no such thing as a credit record, credit report, credit score, any of that. And then only after they worked it through that way, then figures, there's something I should do different because of credit rating considerations. And there may be, but often there isn't.
All right. Thank you very much for that call. Ken Doran, our guest, Madison-based attorney and author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustment, published by Random House. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at foreclosure and bankruptcy now with Ken Doran, Madison-based attorney, author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustment, published by Random House. Glad to have him with us today. Certainly, if you want to join in, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Ken, we had an email from Jack in Hudson who says, I'm currently on the board of our homeowners association, and it wasn't until I was on the board that I learned that homeowners can be put into foreclosure for not paying their association dues. I'm not sure a lot of people realize this. Our board has made the decision to move forward with foreclosure several times in the last year, and given the current financial times, I'm guessing it'll continue. Homeowners who pay association dues need to keep up the payment. Comment on that.
That is absolutely true. There's a lot of different things that can be a lien on the house, give the same claim essentially as a mortgage would. Real estate taxes is one of the more obvious ones, special assessments. Various municipal utilities may have those rights, and homeowners associations and similar organizations do as well. And the whole point of a lien is that if you don't pay any other way, they have the right to go after the property. Then you get into questions of the total liens on the property and what order they have their rights in. And a good question, which Jack may know clearer than I would, of where the homeowners association would come with regard to a mortgage. I'm not absolutely sure on that without looking it up, but that would make a big practical difference both for the owner and the homeowners association of how things would sort out. I would think relatively few people are actually going to lose their home over that if they don't pay, as at some point in the process they'll want to clear that up. But people have a lot of trouble. That just might be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Sarah in Middleton, we're on to you now. Thank you, Sarah, for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question. My mom has some credit card debt, about $12,000. It's mostly due to medical bills. And so she isn't making very much income, and I don't foresee that she'll be able to pay that off. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice about ways to go about resolving that debt.
There are a few possible approaches. If the resources are there to put a major dent in it, if you can work out a schedule just to pay it down that works mathematically, then you may just be able to do that. The problem these days is the interest rates are high, and
right,
the current laws allow them to be increased pretty much without notice. That may change, but it's true as of now. There's some changes that were recently enacted but don't take effect for a year and a half, so that won't help her very much. That's one possible approach. If there are some resources to settle it, these often can be compromised for significant discounts, particularly if you have cash to do it with, and it also takes some patience to work through the process to negotiate it. That may be a possibility. If none of those work, then there are a couple of legal options. There is the possibility of either a personal bankruptcy or what's a variation called a Chapter 13 debt repayment plan to allow payment of them through the court, or possibly for somebody who just needs relief from the interest and can still pay them off. If she can pay them within 3 years, there's a simpler process under Wisconsin state law called a Chapter 128 proceeding. So depending on what, if any, resources really are available to her, one or more of those might be possibilities.
That's great. Thank you very much. I'll check into those.
All right. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Ismar in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hey, hi. I bought my house in 2007. Then in 2008, identity theft happened. Somebody bought a house on my name. Now they cleared it all out. And I was wondering, don't they owe me some type of special consideration because it was the same mortgage company and my credit hasn't been restored yet? So I'll listen to the answer off the air.
All right. So you were the victim, just so I have it straight, you were the victim of identity theft.
Right. I bought a house in 2007. Then I was trying to refinance and I couldn't because somebody had bought a house in Florida on my name.
Oh.
And then they took an equity loan on top of it, all with the same mortgage company that gave me my original mortgage up in Minneapolis.
Oh, boy.
Which, by the way, they have gone under. You know, they got bought out by another big bank. And so, you know, I'm trying to get the low rates because I used to have good credit. And, I mean, don't they owe me some type of special consideration for, you know, not watching the hand house? Whatever.
Well, you would think so, but you and I and Larry agreeing on that won't get you very far, I'm afraid. Did I understand you to say that the actual records now have been cleared up, so no one is trying to collect anything from you that really isn't yours?
Yes, but they told me it's going to take 3 to 4 months to clear my credit.
Well, if you've gotten that far and are able to get things cleared up in another 3 to 4 months, you know, you're ahead of where a lot of people are with identity theft. It would be nice if you could get them to go the extra mile and say, yes, it was our mistake, and we are going to give you some special consideration for that. And I urge you to ask that and be polite but firm about it. I honestly am skeptical of whether you'll get that far on it. If you're able just to clear up the record so that this problem is not they don't keep trying to actually collect the erroneous debts from you, that's a pretty good accomplishment, and more would be nice, but that puts you ahead of a lot of people.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll go to Joe at Oconomowoc next. Joe, hello.
Good morning. I had just a basic credit score question. Doesn't have much to do with bankruptcy, but my wife and I have been married for over 10 years. I do the finances in our household, and we recently applied for a home equity line of credit, and I noticed our credit scores. My credit score was around 680, and my wife's was well north of 700, and I'm just wondering why that is.
Why would yours be lower than hers
on the same information?
Yeah.
Very difficult to say. The actual formulas, the whole existence of credit scores was supposed to be secret till a few years ago, and it's gradually gotten more public, but it's still kind of a murky area, and they certainly don't publish the exact formulas for them. And there's a lot of different companies. There's three different major credit bureaus and different scoring agencies, so your scores may be different not only between husband and wife, but for the same person across multiple agencies. And
okay.
I'm not sure you'll ever get a clear statement on that. And fortunately, it may not make that huge a difference. The credit scores and the credit records generally are sometimes used more as a lever than anything else, or a bludgeon to distract people with. I would say basically those are relatively good scores, and unless if you think it's causing you some very specific problem that you really can pin down to that, then you need to try and track down if there's some specific problem that you can deal with. Often there isn't, and you need to be careful about getting too distracted on that if there's not really very much at stake.
Mm.
Sure. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bonnie wants to know how she can get credit card offers to her 13-year-old daughter to stop. Should she run a credit check on her daughter?
Probably should. That's surprising. Is if that's the case, then her daughter may well already have a credit record in her own name, which isn't hard to do. Those agencies try and collect records on absolutely everybody. So you might want to check that. The first place to go is on the internet is a website called annualcreditreport.com. And that's important. That's the official website that allows you to get access to free credit reports. And there are other commercial sites, some of which are heavily advertised with similar names. But that's the place to go, annualcreditreport.com, and check if there is a record in her name and what's on there. If there is, that is probably the source of that. And there are things you can, steps you can take to prevent release of your record and to request various things not be sent, and that will probably be the most effective way to go. And you can find those resources through the internet. But it's hard, in general, hard to keep people from sending you things in the mail, but that one you may be able to make some progress with.
Danielle in La Crosse writes that, I received notice of my ex-husband and his new wife's bankruptcy. Why would I receive this notice? The only thing we have share financially is child support. Can he file bankruptcy on child support?
Yes, that's very likely why you got the notice, and no, his bankruptcy will not affect the child support. In filing a bankruptcy, generally, you need to list everybody you owe money to or might owe money to or who even thinks you do, even if they're wrong. And one thing you're specifically required to list is anybody you're paying any sort of child support or alimony or maintenance or any sort of family obligation to. So even if there's no other financial connection of any kind, that would be enough to cause you to get notice. Child support of any kind is not going to be affected by the bankruptcy. The only partial exception to that is if he owes you money for any kind of property settlement, and then in some cases that may be affected by a bankruptcy. But that's about the best I can tell you without knowing a lot more of the details of your situation.
All right. Then let's go to Paul in Green Bay. Paul, hello to you.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm in Chapter 13 right now, and I've heard of Chapter 128, and I'm wondering what the difference is, and if I know I can stop this action at any time, if there's any reason to switch to that, or I've never heard of it before.
They are similar in some ways, but also different in some important ways. Chapter 13 is handled, it's provided for under federal law, handled by the federal bankruptcy courts. It's a variation of a bankruptcy that involves payment through the court of at least some debts rather than asking for an immediate discharge of debts. Most Chapter 13s are, in a sense, partial bankruptcies where not everything gets paid in full. There are a variety of reasons why people might choose that course. Some people who have more property or more debts than would be allowed to be protected under a straight Chapter 7 bankruptcy, some mortgage problems, some tax problems, a few others. A Chapter 128 is a payment plan under court protection under Wisconsin law that does not involve the bankruptcy courts. It does not allow for reduction of debts. You generally need to pay at least the full principal on it and can only run for 3 years. So those are the disadvantages. The advantages are you can do more picking and choosing among creditors under Chapter 128, and it is, you know, a less drastic step on your financial records. If you're already in a Chapter 13, it would be relatively unusual that you'd want to switch to a Chapter 128, but if you want to check it out, you might you know, talk to your lawyer or find a lawyer who handles those and see how it would work in your particular case.
Okay, that information in your book?
Not the Chapter 128 part, because the book was written more for a national audience, and that would be too specialized. So that part would not be in there.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck to you. Josh in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Josh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is relative to my mother currently has about $15,000 in credit card debt and an additional $10,000 to $15,000 in medical bills. In the family, there's a family trust of an asset, a piece of real estate worth, let's call it $1 million. It'll be split about three ways between aunt and uncle and my mom. Wanted to know one of the best ways to protect that asset. We'd love to see that passed down through the family and not gobbled up by creditors. Would Chapter 128 be an effective approach relative to that?
It might be. I do not think that going into a Chapter 128 would jeopardize that in any way. I would be careful. I would not make any changes in anything to try to protect your mother without getting very good advice. There's some real tricks and traps here where in trying to improve the situation, you can make it worse in ways that are hard to undo. If it has the right or if it has certain types of language in the way the documents were drafted, in fact, it may already be pretty well protected from any creditors of the people who will benefit from them. But there's no way to be sure about that without looking very specifically at the actual documents. So
the trust language.
Pardon?
The trust language.
Yes. So if this is an issue, then you want to find people whose knowledge and judgment you trust and sit down with those documents and determine exactly what the legal situation is now before you even think about trying to change anything.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks.
Thanks very much for calling. And let's see. Esther in Cambridge wants to know how long closed credit cards show up on credit reports.
Ordinarily, the information on them can show up for 7 years. As an earlier caller discovered, it may not be quite that simple. These things do get sold from one company to another and passed around, and things a lot older than that do crop up. That's the basic rule on it. Again, you have to be careful about assuming how much difference that makes. Ordinarily, one or two old entries in your credit won't stop you from getting more credit than is good for you.
All right. Steve in Crystal Lake, Illinois. On to you now. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Yes, I just had a question about medical expenses, and we have a situation where we had a procedure for my son, and we paid it all off and everything. Then the insurance company said that everything was covered, and all of a sudden we get a bill from the hospital that says, no, it's not covered. And they've been going back and forth, and all of a sudden then the insurance company said, well, we're not going to pay it, and then the medical facility sent it on to a creditor. And, I mean, we were told everything was paid in full. Everything was taken care of. So I went back and forth with the medical facility trying to get it all straightened out. They sent it to a creditor, and we're still trying to get it all straightened out. And they're telling us now that they're putting it against our credit report. I didn't know that medical expenses could go against your credit report.
Well,
can they?
Well, they're not reported as automatically as a lot of other things, but I don't know there's any rule that says they can't be. The question is, do you owe the money? And if they do, or if they have a good faith legal claim that you do, then I believe that can be reported. Of whether you do owe the money or not, that gets into tricky and possibly very complicated business about what your insurance is actually does cover. And it sounds like you've been through that a lot and got as far as you're going on that. You certainly, if there's any hope there, you ought to exhaust the possibilities with your insurance company. You don't necessarily have to take their word for it of either what the policy covers or what they ought to be trying to cover. Part of the value of insurance in our strange, complicated market is not just that what they'll pay for it, but that they are your bargaining agent with the medical providers to get better rates and to keep you from having to pay it. But on the other hand, there are also co-pays and limitations on most insurance. So it is far more complicated than we could hope to determine here of whether you really do owe that money or not. But and if there's anything left to be done of getting that sorted out directly, you ought to try it.
Yeah, we tried everything. I basically what I was told by the insurance company was they had negotiated out a price, everything was agreed upon, everything was paid out, and that the medical facility decided that they did not like what they were getting paid, and so they decided to just charge us and see if we would pay it. Actually, that's what they told me, too. Uh-huh. Basically, they don't like what they got paid, so they're going to charge us something, and no matter who says what, then if we don't like it, then they just send it on to a credit collection agency. Mm-hmm. And it's up to us to either pay them that way or one way or the other. So, mm-hmm. Which seems to me that there should be some kind of a rule out there that says, upon price, this is it. And you pay it, and you got paid bills that say that's paid. That's
well.
It.
There may be change coming in the pipeline, but this is almost a uniquely American problem in the developed world to go around with these kinds of issues. And the fact that you had insurance that covered most of it puts you ahead of some people. But unfortunately, there's no easy or simple answer to that.
You know, you might just, on that one, since they agreed to a price, you might just call the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection and have the consumer protection people look into that for you.
Well, I can because the operation is out of Janesville. The medical company, the company that runs the hospital down here in Illinois, is their home office is in Janesville. So well, I'll do that.
If the hospital was in, where did you get the treatment, in Wisconsin or Illinois?
We got treatment down in Illinois.
You might have to find, yeah, well, that's probably more important than where the collection agency is. You might have to find your Illinois equivalent of the agency that Larry was referring to. There may be somebody who can help you there.
Yeah, and frankly, if you call Consumer Protection, they'll be able to tell you. There are people online, and they'd be able to say, well, we can deal with it, or here's the people in Illinois that can deal with it.
Okay, I'll do that. Can I get that information online?
Just go online to Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and there's a consumer hotline number, and it'll be on the website. Unfortunately, I don't have it right off the top of my head.
That's a starting point. It's just very, very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I can understand that if the price was already agreed upon by both parties. Oh, boy. One other final thing here, Ken, and that's on the IRS on tax debt, paying off tax debts. Will the IRS do an installment plan or cut a deal with you at all?
Yes, and that again depends a lot on individual situations. Something which comes as a surprise to many people is that some taxes can be eliminated in a bankruptcy if they're your own personal income taxes, not business withholding taxes or anything like that, not real estate taxes, but your own personal income taxes, and they're more than 3 years old in terms of when they first became due. For instance, as we stand now in 08, taxes from the 04 tax year or earlier may, in fact, be dischargeable in a bankruptcy. There's more wrinkles to it than that, but that's a starting point. If you have newer taxes than that or other categories of them, then you need to look to other options. You can nearly always work out an installment plan to pay it. There are mechanisms to make what's called an offer and compromise. If you can show you have limited resources, you can get the state or tax agencies to either accept less or in a severe enough case, just suspend collection based on your lack of ability to pay.
Ken, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll come back and do this again.
It would be my pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
Ken Doran, a Madison-based attorney, author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustments, in a second edition published by Random House. He'll be back. We'll talk again. Tomorrow, we'll talk with Rich Osthoff of rural Mauston. He's a fly fisherman, and we'll talk about that. Stay with us.
While the whole world is busy writing great books, fewer than 3% of them get translated and make it to American bookshelves. This prompted the New York Times to declare that America yawned at foreign fiction. But is that still true? I'm Jean Faraca. Join us for the year's best books in translation, today at 3, here on Earth.